Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks swimming in the sea.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. Happy holidays to everybody out there. It is Wednesday. It's the day before Thanksgiving. And for those of you who are Cal Poly fans, you know that the football team is in the playoffs for the first time in how many years, Lucas Clark?
Yeah, since 2012. So, and the first home game since 2008.
As long as I've covered Cal Poly football, haven't had a home game
really
in the playoffs. Yeah, wow. So I started doing it in like 2010, 2011. So, you know, Andre Broaddus's first year as a full-time starter, I think. Mm-hmm. So
that was the year before Tim got here, wasn't it?
No, it might have been Tim's first year.
Was that his first year? Okay.
Or his second. It was either his first or
one
second
of the
year.
First years for sure.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So certainly, you know, seen a lot of kind of ups and downs. Saw the last time they made the playoffs when they went and played Sam Houston State with that really good Broaddus team, Deontay Williams.
Right.
I think Christian Ivory was a kind of a third or fourth option on that team.
Mm-hmm.
Really good linebacker, Kenny Jackson, who a lot of people remember, and Sullivan Gross, among others on the defensive line on that team. And it's kind of come full circle since that team came. And I wanted to have on the program the guy who I just said, Lucas Clark. He is the beat writer for Cal Poly football for the San Luis Obispo Tribune. And thanks for coming in the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's good to be back in the studio.
Now, I know you're from the O. So, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? You got big Thanksgiving plans?
I was I just kind of hung out of the house last year for Thanksgiving, but this year, now that I have a significant other, if you will, I'll be hanging out at my girlfriend's parents' house. They live in Los Osos and have been very generous to me and are a really good group of people. So I'm looking forward to going out there tomorrow.
Okay, good deal. And of course, on Saturday we have a Cal Poly game, and you don't even have to travel anywhere. It's pretty fantastic. It's actually really exciting. You know, the equivalent I would say on some level is when Cal Poly hosted a regional in baseball. You know, and that might, you know, you could argue that was bigger. You could argue that wasn't as big. But I think it's a similar feeling where you're really excited. There's an NCAA tournament thing happening here at Spanos here on campus that people can go to in San Luis Obispo. Tell me about the first time they played San Diego. It was a long, long time ago.
Right.
In a galaxy far, far away, it seems like. Yeah. People were still trying to figure out if this offense was going to score, if this defense was going to be able to stop people.
Right.
What'd they win, 38-14?
Yeah, it was 38-16. And
16.
The thing I remember, they came out of the gates really well. I think they were up 10-0 after the first quarter, but were down 13-10 till the last minute of halftime. And really, San Diego had all the momentum. And then
in the second quarter.
Right, in the second quarter. And if you remember, Daniel Graves threw, almost a 60-yard touchdown pass to Kyle Lewis. And that kind of swung the momentum. They go up 17-13 at the break and have a great third quarter and kind of ran away with it. And I think that's kind of been the MO in the series the last few years, other than that 2014 game where they blew them out in San Diego. But it's been closer than I think some people might realize.
Yeah. Poly's always kind of come out on top, but San Diego always plays a good game. They always have good fan support. I think they're going to actually bring a ton of people to this game.
Right.
USD, I don't know what their closest in-league opponent, they're in the Pioneer League, right?
Mm-hmm.
But their closest in-league opponent might be in like Colorado or like, I don't know where. It's far away.
Mm-hmm.
There's only four FCS teams in California, and they're one of them. So
right.
They're going to be excited to only have to drive 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to somebody before the selection show, and if you look at Cal Poly versus some of the, maybe there's a team who's going on the road this week who might deserve to be at home more than Cal Poly, I'd say, if you look at records and everything else. But somebody I talked to said you can never underestimate the cheapness of the NCAA, and not that Cal Poly doesn't deserve to play at home, but after losing two out of their last three, you know, I think it's not a surprise because you know where they are geographically,
mm-hmm.
and you know that San Diego was in the playoffs too, so you say, okay,
right.
you know, I don't think there's any other way. Instead of paying what, I don't know how much a charter is, 30 grand, 20 grand to send both teams on the road somewhere in the middle of the country. Hey, how about San Diego drives up for about, you know, $2,000 or whatever that charter bus is?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense, absolutely, financially.
And
there's a bidding process as well. Is there not, or is it just?
I think there is. I think there is, and I think I don't know exactly how it works. I would have to
neither
ask
do I.
Don Oberhelman or somebody like that in terms of exactly what that looks like and the timeline of that. I'd imagine it's a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Or maybe they do it, you know, the week before and say, if your team is being considered to host a first round game here, you know, what would that look like? It's kind of the whole bidding process thing's kind of weird.
Yeah. Not something I fully understand either, actually.
Yeah. It's something I need to get into, but either way, Cal Poly's playing at home. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the Kyle Lewis play in that game. And I think it's really interesting. Kyle's always been an explosive guy. He had a few explosive plays last year, I think, where he was, you know, getting downfield, but he was never like at every game guaranteed one or two just breakaway plays. You saw it when he came off of the injury last week, that sweet catch in the end zone, and what he does to stretch the field for Cal Poly, either with the sweep game or with, you know, the sweep option game or with the passing game, because he is just flat out faster than most guys. And Poly doesn't have a lot of, well, they have a lot of smart guys and a lot of guys that can make good cuts at good times. Joe Prothro is the other one, I think, who has kind of physical, I don't want to say dominance, but he stands out physically.
Yeah.
And Kyle Lewis is the other guy that stands out physically. And as Cal Poly lost against Eastern Washington and as they lost at Weber State without any Kyle Lewis at Weber, you thought, man, this is a guy who they really need, even to just be out there. I think he touched the ball, you know, under five times, I'd say, in that last game.
Yeah.
But really, he makes a difference when he's out there.
Oh, absolutely. I've been a huge Kyle Lewis fan from day one. And just, you see, you mentioned him physically, I think, is, like I've mentioned before, his dad's a professional bodybuilder and he has some great genetics. And
his brother plays at Sac State.
Right. His brother's an extremely explosive player at Sac State. And he's, like you mentioned, he's the constant home run threat. And that's something that this offense really, really capitalized on this year, all year long. If opposing defenses were able to slow some of the triple option and pro throw up the middle, he really provided a, you know, an element where he could score a touchdown from anywhere on the field at any point. And I don't know about you, but you mentioned he only had a few touches, but I thought he looked pretty dang good last week in the few touches that he did have, not quite as hesitant as I thought he might be, which was good to see.
Yeah, he had his knee brace on, and, you know, I think the sweeps weren't super effective. I think Northern Colorado was pretty good at getting outside. One thing that I thought, speaking of sweeps, was that Kyle has a hard time cutting it up kind of on the angle on the inside, kind of halfway between maybe the tackle and the sideline.
Right.
But all year, Corey Garcia has been going kind of for the outside, kind of no matter what. You knew he was just going to go as far outside as possible and try to get the edge. And if you were the cornerback or the outside linebacker and you could string it out all the way there, you're going to get a play with no yards gained. Mm-hmm. Against Northern Colorado, he cut it up a few times really nicely and showed a little bit different look. I mean, I know these are little things in the triple option that teams plan for, they scheme for, they see tendencies. I thought Kyle went kind of, or not Kyle, but Corey went against some of those tendencies and had an 88-yard game, I thought, because of it. Because he started to kind of see upfield a little bit more and just cut up and get his six yards instead of trying to break it outside and get 10 or 15.
Right. Well, he's averaging, I think, almost like 7 yards a carry this year. So whatever he's been doing has worked well. And he's at number, I think he's sixth all-time in career rushing and has been, I think he's in the 800, 820 range right now. So has a chance to be over 1,000 yards for the second time in his career. And, man, he runs so tough. Like, I don't think he gets enough credit for how hard he finishes runs. It is given a lot of the time out to the perimeter and a cornerback trying to tackle him, but he puts his head down and finishes every single run, and I really respect that about him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think without Kyle, I think Corey was the only threat for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you have Kyle and Corey on separate, on opposing wingbacks, I guess, then it really, you can't say, hey, it's going this way.
Right.
If Corey's on the left side and Kyle's on the right, you or not Kyle, somebody else is on the right. You know, in previous games, you've been able to say, okay, Corey's on the left, it's going to be an option to the right. Corey's going to go in motion, it's going to be an option to the right. The other thing that they did that was different this past week that got them in the playoffs was Peluso. I thought doing the same exact thing as, you know, being that other option besides Corey or Kyle and them kind of going counter to what their tendencies had been. In the last, you know, in the last game.
Yeah, DJ's, I mean, I think we're both a big fan of DJ the person, and it's been good. He's been banged up. I think he missed three or four games throughout the year with little injuries, and he looked as, I thought as fast and as explosive as I can remember since he's been here these last 2 years. And that one run, the 45-yarder down the right sideline, I think that was maybe the best I'd ever seen him. And it was a career-long touchdown run. And yeah. So that's what, like we've talked about, that's what makes Cal Poly dangerous, is when you get the Pelusos and the Carson McMurtries and the J.J. Koskis, those other guys outside of the headliners playing well. That's what makes these guys so dangerous, I think.
Yeah, if you only have two or three guys who you have to key on, and you know what types of runs they make. But I think, and it's a credit to Justin Wood, in terms of being able to pitch out to pro throw a couple times. You know, I mean, they ran the fullback pitch. I mean, even, two or three times or the fullback option. You know, they're opening up the playbook, so to speak. And Tim Walsh spoke to the importance of scoring early in order to be able to open up the playbook. But credit to Coach Wood for, you know, within the triple option, you can run the triple option real boring, or you can run the triple option and have more threats and more types of plays. And if you have those counters out there, Cal Poly is a lot harder to scheme for defensively. What do you think the biggest difference was? Was it just health in this last game? I know we talked about it before the game a little bit, texting back and forth that, you know, hey, if they have Kyle, you know, I give them a pretty good shot.
Right.
If Kyle's not playing, and if Dano's still limping around, and if Joe's still limping around, Northern Colorado. I mean, and you saw it in Northern Colorado. They put up almost 50 points on Cal Poly. You know, it's a good thing all those guys were healthy.
Yeah.
Do you think the big difference is Cal Poly healthy or not? Maybe throughout the season when you look at how they play and who they play.
Right, and I think the players mentioned it. It's like it seems like every week they have, you know, one or two guys, key guys, who are not 100%. I don't know if anybody on any team in the country is 100% this point in the year, but how good was Dano? I mean, I think really he was the difference, and we could talk, you know, at length about him, but I thought he was incredible. I mean, 14 for 15 passing, 191 yards, two touchdowns, runs for 147 and another score, and was brilliant all the way around.
Yeah, and so let's talk about Dano, because I think Dano Graves is somebody who's been, I don't know about like polarizing. I don't think he's a polarizing guy, but I think when you look at him, you see a guy who's well under 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
You see a guy who's not very big. You see a player who for the last two or three years, has been kind of in the mix, but never taken the bull by the horns on some level, has always competed. His first year here, there were four quarterbacks with equal chance to be the starter going into the season, when it was Moraga and Trozine and Brown and Dano.
Yeah.
And Moraga got hurt, and then the rest of that year, and it really ever since then until the beginning of last year, there was like a year and a half period there when it was Dano and it was Chris and it was Dano and it was Chris, and you never really knew. To be able to like have the foresight, I guess, to say, I'm going to redshirt my senior year and let this other guy do his thing, and then I'm going to have the reins next year, I thought was a really interesting, like, just plan, and it takes a guy with a certain amount of perspective to be able to be okay with that on a lot of levels.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, I mean, he's had so much success throughout his prep career, and then coming in here into that situation. And I thought, you know, I had only been here for 2 years, like, you know, so I had never seen, you know, 13, 14. I didn't see him play at all. And I saw him, what only thing I saw was scout team last year, and he was injured. So I had no gauge of what Dano was capable of at all coming into this year.
And there's one, like, if I was going to criticize, and I'm not a guy who's super critical of like Cal Poly coaches or the style they play or anything else. I think they do what they need to do. And I think, you know, if you're a Cal Poly fan, you can't argue with, you know, a year like this year where they scheduled tough and got into the playoffs because of it. You know, that South Dakota State win was just so huge. But when you look at kind of some of the things that happen with a Cal Poly quarterback, and you saw a little bit of it with Chris Brown last year, was when you're banged up, you still sometimes play. You know, no matter who's behind you, kind of. And there was a point in Dano's season that year that I talked about two or three years ago when they played at Montana and they lost a close game at Montana. It was a wild end to the game where Poly, I think, scored on a field goal or scored a late touchdown. And then Montana went back and a guy named Ellis Henderson caught a ball in the end zone and beat him. But that was a game that it was really awesome to watch a kid like Dano grind it out, despite obviously not being able to move as well as he needed to.
Yeah.
But when you can see a guy like hobbling on TV, that's like the only criticism I would ever have is like, man, he's still in there. and you have theoretically like other guys who were really close in camp and so forth. I think that's, if there's ever been a criticism that I've had, that, you know, that situation, and it's come up just a couple of times where we're just sticking with this guy. And, you know, I guess it's a credit to somebody for rewarding a player for being loyal, but being loyal to that player. But I think it's interesting when you watch Cal Poly team, especially at quarterback with a guy who's dinged up, can't do all the things that he maybe usually can. And I thought Weber State was an interesting game in that regard. You're playing on turf. You're out there. Dano had a knee thing on his knee that the guys on TV were commenting on. It was like a 4-inch thick pad, like of foam on his knee pad. Mm-hmm. I don't know whatever injury, he didn't have it last week.
Right.
But I look at something like that, and then you see like, oh man, you know, he's not quite moving like he usually does. And his ability though to read defense, he's made me a believer this year.
Oh yeah.
When there were four guys out there and I was kind of at practice sometimes, I'd be like, man, I just don't think it's him. And he was only a sophomore technically then, coming off of a season at the Air Force Academy. Right. But I was like, man, it's just, I don't see the big play opportunities. I think this year he's gotten himself faster. He's gotten physically bigger and he's matured that way, you know, in terms of putting work in. But that kind of on top of that, the ability to distribute the ball to guys who can be there and can be distributors or can accept that distribution, I guess, is a big deal. So you know, props to Dano. I think the passing game this last game was something that, again, it's different.
Right.
When Cal Poly's the same game to game, by the third game, they're easy to scheme for.
Mm-hmm.
When they're different game to game, they're a lot harder.
Right. And they were, I mean, he was excellent. And I wrote about this today. I wrote about the offensive line for
SanLuisObispo.com.
Yeah, good plug for tomorrow. And I think there's sort of almost a misconception among fans and even among the players when I interview them, that they think, you know, Cal Poly is throwing the ball 25 times more a game this year, and that's not true at all. I mean, they threw 134 passes last year, 145 this year, so that's one attempt more per game this year. And Dano's really just, he's capitalized on those opportunities and the play action stuff.
He's been an accurate thrower. Say whatever you will, but when you have a quarterback's coach who's your offensive coordinator, I think he puts Dano in positions to throw the ball out of the pocket
he has that same mindset.
He's thinking alongside that way,
right,
you know, as opposed to like an offensive lineman or offensive line coach who's the coordinator, who's maybe thinking of things in a little bit different way. And I think one of the biggest kind of underlying carrying stories throughout this year has been Justin Wood and the job he's done in his first year calling plays. I mean, what have you seen? I know I asked Tim about it a month ago, when Poly was 6-2 or something like that. What have you seen there, and what are your thoughts about kind of the play calling this year versus what you saw last year?
Yeah, last year was very vanilla. Granted, they rushed for over 4,200 yards, set a Big Sky record, and
Tim would say, "What do you want?"
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the numbers were incredible, but I think, and that's what Tim has said really since he hired or promoted Justin in the summer, that he wanted someone who had that quarterback's perspective.
Right.
Calling the plays, and I think it's worked out really, really well. I think he has a strong relationship with Dano, and again, they're not. It's not like they're airing it out and throwing it a ton more, but the opportunities that they do get are, you know, you're getting guys open on those hitch routes to the outside, or Kyle Lewis on a wheel route down the sideline, and Dano being the most efficient, accurate passer in the conference certainly helped.
Yeah, accuracy is a big thing. I think Chris Brown always had the bigger arm, could you know, put the ball in tight spaces sometimes, but in terms of like missing guys downfield, I felt like a couple times a game, Poly would always kind of miss somebody downfield, and you'd say, okay, it's kind of how it goes. But it's nice when you have a guy who can kind of put it in there like that Kyle Lewis pass.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, other unsung hero, Carson McMurtry doesn't catch a pass every game, but he caught like five in the last game for 50 yards or something, which was, you know, 10 yards a pass on a hitch route to get you a first down on second and seven or third and four or third and six. You know, he gets 8 yards. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought he played a really just a solid workman's game.
Yeah.
You know, he's out there to block mostly on the end and
does a good job with it,
as is like DJ Peluso and a lot of those guys, you know, when they're not handling the ball. those Cal Poly receivers have to block.
Yeah.
But he's kind of done a nice job this last game of
absolutely
kind of being in there. And all year, really, he's stepped up. I mean, mm-hmm. he's a kid who it was tough to throw. I mean, he couldn't catch a ball last year because he had a big cast on his arm.
Right.
You know, the other kind of carrying storyline going into this game, and it's one that Cal Poly probably would have liked to have put away and thrown and flushed a year or two ago, mm-hmm. is the guys who got arrested at Cal Poly, however many, four of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even, it's been a while now.
Yeah.
But I looked on GoPoly.com and you can still see the rosters from different years.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the 2013 roster, 2012, one of those, when Carson McMurtry was a freshman.
Yeah.
And Cam Akins was also a freshman. And so you say to yourself, like, okay, like this team has gone through some things with guys who they, all the legal stuff aside, just yeah. football wise, guys
right.
who they thought were gonna be contributors
players.
And players, and certainly those guys, at least in terms of Ivory and Akins, were both
right.
those were dudes in terms
yeah.
of athleticism and talent on the field. And so you look now and you say, okay, Poly's kind of started to come out of that that whatever malaise that was caused or lack. I felt like last year there was always kind of one or two guys who they were missing mm-hmm. on some level still. When you looked at, like, you know, who's getting the distribution, how's
right.
the ball moving around. Oh man, Chris Brown carried it 34 times or whatever it was. I mean, right?
Right.
He
oh, yeah.
set, like, I mean, quarterback carries, he was
yeah.
just getting killed.
He had 250 as a junior, which is incredible. Joe Prothro didn't have 250 this year.
Right.
Which
right.
is
yeah.
nuts.
Exactly. So, you know, you kind of finally come out of that, and Dano's a guy who has distribution skills and actually has some guys around him now who are used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle Lewis is one of those guys who stepped up big time. But I think moving forward, one of the things that you look back on the last 2 years at Cal Poly and something like that incident has an effect on that year's team.
Right.
But it has a long-term effect too, that I think just now they would tell me they shook it off before last year and before the year before probably.
Right.
But you start to see that there's some more depth
yeah.
in terms of talent and skill than there has been. You mentioned the other day, Poly has, out of their 19 seniors, how many of them redshirted?
Yeah, 11 or fifth year seniors.
Right, right. And a lot of those fifth year seniors are big contributors.
Mm-hmm. And they were freshmen on that 2012 team that went to the playoffs, and they were running the scout teams and everything last year. So it really, like you said, has come full circle for that group, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, so if you carry my storyline through, and I probably muddled my way through it verbally, but you know, it is an interesting. I mean, those guys' career at Cal Poly has really spanned a playoff team,
mm-hmm.
kind of feeling not great in the middle, and then you know, in terms of record, and then being able to do their thing and getting to the playoffs. Were they that much better this year than last year?
Right. And that's a tricky question, because, like we've said, I mean, they were so close last year. And I think the thing that stuck with me, Tim Walsh said he's never had a team beat itself more so than the 2015 team, with all those turnovers and the fumbles. And even beyond that, I mean, they would get, you know, a personal foul in a late fourth quarter situation, silly, just little mental miscues
totally.
That they've largely avoided this year. And I think that ultimately is the difference, X's and O's wise and talent wise.
Yeah.
I don't think they've made a huge leap this year. They're just executing more.
Yeah, when Lewis flipped the ball at that defensive back the
right.
other night, and it was like, oh man, that hasn't happened in a while.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a couple of years. You know, it's been a little while this year. Like, that kind of stuff hasn't happened as much.
Right.
No matter who it is, you know, getting a personal foul away from the ball after the defense just got off on third down.
Right.
You'd see sometimes last year, on a number of occasions,
that exact situation happened multiple times last year. And it reminds me, there was one at Eastern Washington when they're going to win that game up 15 in the fourth quarter, and the defense literally
talk
got
about ones you'd like back.
Yeah, got a stop on third down, and then there's a personal foul 20 yards away from the play, and it's just like, that was kind of a microcosm of the entire season.
Totally. So, you know, this is going to be an exciting game. What do you expect? Like, I'm interested to see kind of what the turnout is. It's playoff football, but everybody's still probably at home for Thanksgiving if you're a student.
Yeah.
Are the students going to come back? I don't know.
Yeah, you would probably have a better gauge of that than I would. I don't know.
I got nothing, man.
It's tough because, I mean, I imagine does school start again on Monday? So I don't imagine a lot of the student body would be back around until Sunday evening to get ready for class on Monday.
Unless they're super into it.
Right. And hopefully there will be some.
Maybe the dorms aren't even open, right, until Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know. You could be right.
Yeah.
Hopefully
yeah.
San Diego brings a large contingent like we think they might.
That'll be interesting. Yeah, I'm interested to see that. I know some of the larger contingents have been the ones from
San Diego.
From California. Yeah. So like when San Diego comes up, or when
Davis or Sac, or when
they played Yale a couple years ago, that was the bottom to me.
Was that
of the whole like of the whole trajectory and arc? That Yale game was pretty much the worst. They were, you know, that's a team they should have beaten easily, and they got handled by.
The only thing I wasn't here for that one, obviously, but wasn't that the game that Willie Tucker was injured and that kind of derailed the
whole
rest
of his
career? It
was a whole deal. Yeah, it was a whole. I mean, there was a lot of bad stuff on that game.
Yeah,
yeah, it wasn't good at all. But I think, you know, you look now and you're okay. Here we go. Game on Saturday, 4:00. What else are you writing about this week? What else is kind of a good story? I know you wrote about the kid who hurt himself and was paralyzed.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stuff. Yeah, like you mentioned,
a story that's been going around on social media.
Yeah, the Jay Cavier, who was a recruit who was from Danville, and he was paralyzed the day before his high school graduation and was going to be a preferred walk-on offensive lineman, and has just a tremendous attitude, and he's been going through stuff most people can never imagine. So I wrote about that on Monday, and that went A1 and was kind of cool. And then focusing more on football this week, I touched on the offensive line and a group that's led the FCS in rushing 4 straight years, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, that's a whole entire, I mean, I think Matt Fisher and Nick Enriquez, those seniors, have been a part of 4 straight classes that have been a part of that.
So through all this, you know, we talk about like the low years, the down years,
right?
This is still a program that's moved the ball on offense.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what you do, Cal Poly's going to move the ball. They're going to gain yards on the ground.
Yeah, and I mean, there's 122 FBS teams, and they've been the best at what they do for 4 straight years. I think there's something to be said for that consistency and just the legacy that offensive line has left behind. And
yeah.
It's been impressive. And then as far as San Diego, what to look for there, the guy who jumps out, I mean, it's hard to gauge because they play in the Pioneer Valley League, which is it's a non-scholarship league. So San Diego is by far the best team in that conference.
Right.
And so it's tough to identify guys who are really talented, but they have a defensive end, Jonathan Peterson,
uh-huh.
who's second in the country in sacks at 11.5. He had 19 or 20 tackles for loss and can disrupt some things. So, I mean, they have some skill and some
good
veteran guys. Yeah.
Did they have a crazy tight end, or was that last year?
They do have, I can't remember his last name, I think it's Dwelly or Dwally or something like that. He scored 2 touchdowns in the first half of the, he scored both their touchdowns actually in the September
game. He was like 6'6", and like just a, he looks like a, like a legit.
Yeah, I think he's
Division
like 6'6", 240
FBS,
or something.
Like he looks like an FBS tight end.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He reminds me of, I don't know if you remember from Weber State, but Vollert, he was the first team All Big Sky tight end, another big body guy who can get downfield and catch the ball against some of the smaller defensive backs. So they have talented kids. There's no two ways around it.
For Cal Poly in this game, is it really just about limiting mistakes and doing what they do?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any question they're the better team across the board on offense and defense, but you can't fall into an early hole, which we've seen them do at home, but in the past fall down 21-0, which I don't think San Diego quite has the horsepower to go up 3 touchdowns, but I could be mistaken.
Northern Colorado just put up 40 something with their backup.
Right. So. That's true. And he threw the, excuse my language, he threw the ball extremely well. Sorry, caught myself there.
No, yeah.
I was very impressed with his arm strength. I don't know why, but than other Big Sky quarterbacks, he really impressed me.
Yeah, he was getting out there, and they were doing a lot of good bootleg stuff. And
they had some really good, I mean, that Diggs guy, that receiver, he was the fastest guy in the conference, I thought.
Those little guys?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're tough to defend for 5-6 seconds, so it's
totally
interesting.
Totally. Okay, cool. So Saturday we got our game. I know you haven't seen basketball, but let's just quickly touch on it because it's men's basketball is a sport that's coming up. They've played 4 games. They beat the 2 non-Division I teams they played. They lost the 2 on the road that they played at Pepperdine and at Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one's like, you know, the worst loss in the world. It's not like they went to I don't know where and lost.
Right.
You went to 1 game.
Mm-hmm.
What's your read on this team? I went to both home games last week. And I'll just tell you mine. I think Donovan Fields is going to have to score. And I think a lot of perimeter players are going to have to make a lot of perimeter shots for them to stay in games and win games. And they're going to have to get somebody down low who's playing smart and who's able to contribute or kind of, you know, at least compete with other bigs. I think up front's a place that Cal Poly doesn't have as much depth maybe as they thought they would.
Right. Yeah, I think, I mean, it's the question, like you kind of touched on, for me is who's gonna score? I mean, I don't know if there's a surefire double-digit scorer in there. Obviously, Luke Mikkel at the forward spot, he's a great, you know, 18-foot jump shooter.
His mid-range game is solid.
Right, very, very solid. But, I mean, are you going to live and die by his 15 shot attempts a night? And I think Josh Martin's an incredible athlete, but I don't know where if you can consistently get a double-double out of him. But he's, right. I mean, he's been impressive so far. The key to me, you mentioned Fields, but I think Jalen Shedd is going to be the guy who makes these guys go, because he can do so many things. He can get in the paint, he can distribute, he can shoot a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm curious where they're going to score.
I think Jalen's going to be their best player, kind of all around. He's going to have numbers, I think, by the end of the year. He's going to be a point guard who's getting rebounds, and he's tops on the team in assists so far. He's doing a really great job. Showed it at the end of last year, actually, mm-hmm. At the end of his freshman year.
Yeah, started the last 9 games, I think.
And was... his ability to play. Like you said, though, who's going to score? Who's going to be that guy who can create his own shot? Or can create shots for others. I think both Jalen and Donovan on the floor at the same time, you have guys who can get past other players, mm-hmm. who can finish inside for how little Donovan is.
Right.
He's pretty shifty in there with little floaters and other things. I'm interested to see kind of as he becomes comfortable and as the training wheels come off, so to speak, does he get kind of allowed to go create his own shot,
right.
Go put up some shots that might look like wild shots for other guys, but might be good shots for him that mm-hmm. are going to make the defense have to react.
Right.
Because right now, Cal Poly, you know, if you're a defender, you don't really have to react. You don't really have to as much. I mean, given that most of their players like to face the basket, there's really not a back to the basket offensive player on the team. Luke can play with his back to the basket, but he's mostly kind of turn and face up.
Yeah, he wants to work from the elbow.
Right. So who's gonna make the defense have to do something different that they don't want to do? Who's gonna put him in an uncomfortable place? And the two people or three people that really can do that are Shedd and Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Martin gets kind of people in weird weird situations, weird positioning.
Yeah.
And then Fields, I think, has shown that that's something that he can start to do maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see if he develops into that. I mean, he's only a sophomore on paper, so he's still got some time to develop, but he seems like he's really trying to do the right thing and make the right passes out of there. And like I said, Luke's gonna be just solid
mm-hmm.
doing what he does. And it'll be interesting to see. The other thing is defense. I mean, as Poly has changed their offensive scheme to scoring kind of an NCAA closer to like the NCAA average. In terms of scoring points per game, they've also gone from a great defensive team a couple years ago to a team that gives up a lot of points. So let's see kind of how they develop that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is this team going to be kind of savvy enough to play that kind of stretch 2-3, that kind of amoeba defense that Joe played when he first got here?
Because
there were a lot of players that could, you know, see where defenders were and match up the right way. And it was kind of a zone, but it was a real matchup type zone, more like Syracuse kind of matchup zone that I haven't seen in the last couple of years. So, you know, is that something that's going to come back? Kind of how's that going to look? And they're picked to finish 9th in the conference, and they've only played 4 games. They actually have a game today. Maybe going on right now. I don't know what time was that happening.
I can't remember what time it started.
But it could have already happened.
Yeah.
We'll see these next couple games, because these are against teams that are more like at their level.
Mm-hmm.
Pepperdine was as well. But how are they going to come out, and can they get a Division I win or two before they come back home next week? 2 home games next week,
mm-hmm.
I believe, right? Next week?
Yeah, I believe so.
Those are against
before they go on that road trip
The two Texas teams.
Yeah.
Texas A&M Corpus Christi and UTSA.
Yep.
And
good memory.
Those are both doubleheaders. That's going to be fun.
Oh, I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think it gives me an opportunity to see both teams back to back. I think it's like 5 and 8 on Thursday and 4 and 7 on Saturday.
Okay.
And Saturday the 3rd. As I said on my last podcast prior to the game on Saturday the 3rd, Christina Santiago will get her number retired.
Yeah,
so
very cool.
That'll be good. What else going on with Cal Poly or college around here? What else?
Soccer's done.
Yeah.
Basketball's in full swing.
Are you a soccer guy in general?
Not as much as I probably should be. You know, I think I played when I was in second grade, and then
Do you follow the national team?
Not really. Knew that Jurgen was like a you know much more about it, so I can't really speak to that with any knowledge.
With any authority.
Yeah. Authority. But it's fun. I mean, it's fun to watch. I do enjoy watching it.
Yeah. You've seen two UCSB games.
I only got one this year because I missed this year's rivalry game. Where were
that's
we?
That's right.
Because football was in Portland State, so I got to go back to my home state of Oregon.
So last year you saw the game, you saw all the crap that got thrown on the field.
Yeah,
it's a big thing for me.
I know. And regardless of that, what an incredible. I mean, I've gotten to cover some really cool sporting events and some historic arenas and venues, and the Blue Green rivalry. You can't say enough about it. It's incredible.
You think if I try to set something up with Cal Poly, like a food drive instead of like donate food, don't throw it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess my question is, how would it be received by the students? Because I think they love throwing the tortillas. I think they're going to keep smuggling them in every time. What is it that upsets you about it? Are you worried about injuries, or is it a class thing, or what don't you like about it?
I just don't like the idea of throwing anything on the field during any game.
Yeah.
I think it's a precedent. There was a photographer from Santa Barbara 2 years ago who was like, somebody threw a battery on the field, and he was like indignant about it.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, so you're dealing with the 18-year-old male mind here.
Who's probably heavily intoxicated.
Even if he's just amped.
Right.
Okay. He sees that it's cool to throw stuff on the field. That's what he sees. He doesn't see, there's a big difference between a tortilla and a battery. Oh, let me see here. Do I have any other things like tortilla? You know, he doesn't care. That kid got hit by water. I mean, there's a water bottle. There are lots of things that get thrown on the field. I've heard stories about frozen tortillas in Santa Barbara that could hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine.
Have you
seen players get hit with them in the last couple of years?
Oh, yeah, on the sidelines for sure. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And they're not just throwing them when goals are scored.
Right.
Whenever there's players on the sidelines,
they're trying to tag them.
They're trying to hit them. They think it's fun. And I know the soccer teams, it's kind of like a badge. Hey, dude, we're playing this game. There's going to be stuff on this field. They probably look at it like that. I don't know that their cleats would ever slip on a tortilla, but I wouldn't put it past them.
Risk an injury or something.
Right, right. Yeah. And they stopped this year's game twice.
Really?
And told people to stop throwing things or else they would cancel the game. And I kind of wish they would have on some level.
Make that point.
Just to make the point. I don't know. Maybe that's me just being an old man. And I kind of am, and I'm kind of curmudgeonly sometimes, I'll admit. But part of me really doesn't like it. I just think when things start getting out of control, it takes somebody getting hurt. I hope nobody gets hurt ever. I hope other things don't get thrown. But like the UCSB kid got hit in the face.
Yeah.
In the back of the head with a water bottle.
The field?
Yeah, last year. Yeah. So what, at Cal Poly, and who knows what happens? I've never been to a game down at Harder, but I watch them on TV, and those tortillas don't just fly during goals. So, it's interesting. I'm kind of pondering whether like a co-sponsorship thing with the food bank would be like a fun something to try to think about and donate it, don't throw it. I don't know.
I know our sports editor, much to your chagrin, he loves it. He was a big fan. Yeah.
Dan
Edel, who's from Portland.
I tried to have him on and he's been ducking me.
We talked about it today. So he'll be on. He's happy to join you. But yeah, I know you guys weren't able to connect last time.
The tall guy at the Tribune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm tall. He's like 3 inches taller than me. He's like pushing 6'7".
And a soccer guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He covered so he worked for MLS.com for years.
And Peter Crouch.
He was the Portland Timbers beat writer when they won the MLS Cup a couple years ago, and I think a pretty good relationship with Caleb Porter.
Now that Klinsmann's sacked, I'm definitely interested to talk to him about Arena.
Oh, I'm sure he would have some good perspective on that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. So if you want to follow Lucas, you can follow him on Twitter.
Yeah. My handle is just Lucas Clark _slow. I'm posting pretty much strictly Cal Poly and Cuesta stuff on there. So yeah.
Any fun Cuesta stuff lately?
They did well at cross country. They had a local girl, Miranda Deshane, who I think is an Atascadero High School graduate. She won a state title, and then Sean McDermott, a guy who's from Tahoe, also won a state title in cross country. So that's pretty dang exciting for them. I think that's a first in school history.
Dang, Poly and Cuesta.
Yeah, great. Yeah, cross country all the way around. Yeah. We didn't even talk about Peyton Bilo. What a year she had, and what a career she has in front of her for sure.
And this Cal Poly team who won everything at the Big West tournament. They just won everything.
Yeah.
There's an award.
All the athletes of the year, coach of the years. Yeah.
It's just Mark Conover's
doing something right.
Doing something right, man. Holy moly. All right, cool. So I'll see you Saturday.
Yeah.
For those of you who are interested, and I should have put this at the beginning of the podcast because there's only like three people left, if we're lucky. But if you want, I actually won a tailgating spot. So I will be tailgating about halfway up the hill there, and I'll have an easy up. And so look for me. I'm probably going to be starting about 1:30, something like that.
Where'd you win that? How'd you get that?
There was a Cal Poly alumni post on Facebook, and I was paying attention, and they said to tag who you would like to tailgate with.
Hmm.
And I should have tagged you, but I know you'll be working hard, but a little tri-tip or something fun before the game. If you want to bring something, contact me at Fansmanship on Twitter or however. And we're gonna do it up pre-game. Cool. And have some fun. And it should be a good time. It's a playoff game in San Luis Obispo. It's something that doesn't come around a whole lot. No. And there's not going to be another one this year.
No.
This is it.
This is officially last home game. So
let's go down. If Poly wins, let's just kind of say who they'll probably play. If they win, they'll play North Dakota State.
Yeah.
If somehow they beat the number one team in the country, they have to play at South Dakota State again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about that for a draw? It's pretty tough.
Go to North Dakota, come home for a week, go to South Dakota.
Yeah. We're going to get potentially a game in Fargo in December. So that's at least they play indoors there, but holy cow, it's
so
going
to be
a little chilly.
I was looking up flights to Minneapolis because it's like a 5-hour drive.
Yeah.
So if I even thought that, okay, like the cheapest flights straight from LA to Minneapolis, what's that look like? And it's a pretty good deal, actually.
Really?
But then I'm like, do I want to drive from Minneapolis to Fargo in the snow?
In a rental car.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's tough.
You can maybe get stuck in Fargo.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but yeah, I know the team would have a charter.
Maybe I can pull some strings, but yeah, that I was like looking it up. I was like, man, I don't know if I could even swing that. And like you said, getting ahead of ourselves. San Diego's going to come ready to play. It's one of the questions I have for Walsh today is how do you keep them up? How do you keep them ready?
Right.
But Luke, I really appreciate you coming on. And you can follow Luke. I definitely recommend it during games, during the week. Read his stuff at sanluisobispo.com. And we'll catch up with you later.
Sounds good.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up.